Welcome to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George, and I have one of my favorite guests on with me today, Dr. Marilyn Singleton. She is a board-certified anesthesiologist, and she also sits on the board of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. And not only is she a doctor, but she's also a lawyer, which in this day and age is definitely a skill set that we all need to access. It seems like everything in medicine is going upside down, and what's up is down, down is up. And Dr. Singleton is on the front line. She understands the academic side of this, the policy side of this, and she also practices medicine. So it's like a triple threat, perfect storm. And I want to thank you so much for getting up at the crack of dawn to come on our show today, Dr. Singleton.
Oh, it's always my pleasure to come on the show.
You know, I love getting your articles because they're so well thought out, well written, and it's a teaching moment when people are able to actually be able to read them. And the one that you wrote most recently was about Medicare. And we've been hearing a lot about how fabulous Medicare is. The folks who want single payer want Medicare for all. Medicaid has now become the default for Obamacare. And I really want people to understand exactly what it means to be a Medicare providee, you know, someone who's actually on the hook for getting this supposed fabulous healthcare system. And is it okay if they try to expand that to everybody? You know, I read an article back in AAPS from a doctor who wrote about Medicare before it started. And his take on it was that it would break the healthcare system, it would ruin the doctor-patient relationship, and it was basically socialized medicine for seniors. And that seems to be everything he said would happen is happening. So I'm going to give you the floor so you can start off with what your take on, well, Obamacare is, and then we'll talk about Medicare in more detail so people can be educated.
All right. Gee.
That's a big one, huh?
Excuse me. Well, certainly, beginning with Obamacare, I think the good thing that's happening now, just like Nancy Pelosi said, you've got to pass it so you can see what's in it. Then 2 years went along because, of course, no one was going to read it. And now that we're seeing this law be implemented, we can see what's in it. And all it is higher health insurance prices. And I think people are very shocked when they are finding out the sticker price and how little the insurance covers. Mm-hmm. And these are things that are sanctioned by the government. And insurance was better before. Supposedly, this was supposed to be helping insurance. And I went through the whole process for a friend, and I was appalled at the prices. I think that's what got to me the most. The Obamacare plans, they have Medicaid if you qualify, then a bronze plan, which covers 60% of your costs. You pay the other 40% out of pocket, and it has a $6,200 deductible before they start paying.
That's a lot of money.
Now, most people would never spend that.
Mm-hmm.
And so why would you go out and buy this insurance to the tune of $700 a month for terrible coverage? And then you have the silver, same thing, costs more, but it pays 70% of the costs, and you pay 30%. Then you have gold and then platinum and all the with the increasing percentages.
Mm-hmm.
And as it's turning out, and this was something that was predicted, the people who were signing up on the federal and state exchanges are mostly patients who qualify for Medicaid, the insurance for people who are low income. And we all know it is kind of funny when people talk about single payer, they say Medicare for all,
mm-hmm.
since so many people, only the older people are on Medicare, not the younger ones, so they don't really know anything about it.
Right.
So it's easy to say Medicare for all. No one ever says Medicaid for all, because I think in people's hearts, they know Medicaid ends up being second class. care and insurance. And certainly not that physicians don't treat Medicaid patients as well as they treat an insured patient. That's just our duty. You treat all patients like VIPs, mm-hmm. no matter what their insurance is. It's just that fewer and fewer doctors take Medicaid because the payments get lower and lower and lower. In California, last year, they reduced all physicians' Medicaid patients by payments by 10%. 10% is a lot of money if you have a primarily Medicaid practice. I mean, you're talking office salaries, rents, all these things that still must be paid mm-hmm. at market level. And for the state to just do an across-the-board 10% reduction in payments.
Did that also apply to hospitals or just independent docs?
This was just for physicians.
You're kidding. Mm-hmm. So, wow.
Well, they already pay hospitals so little that there's so few hospitals that even have Medicaid contracts anymore.
Oh, I had no idea. I thought that they were pretty much spared because they got extra payment for indigent patients. So they really are getting a hit then.
Oh, completely. And it's funny because various programs pop up. Like in California, our indigent patient program was supposed to be paid for by extra taxes that were put on cigarettes. And this is several years ago when mm-hmm. they raised the cigarette taxes. And it got to be kind of amusing. It's when a patient would come in and they'd have zero insurance, and the social workers at the hospital would always sign them up for Medi-Cal retroactively. But for those people who wouldn't complete the paperwork and kind of storm off and say they didn't want it, you were supposed to get paid from the indigent patient fund, and it would be in the range of a couple dollars.
God.
For an entire surgery.
That's not funny. It's really sad.
It is sad. But the problem is politicians love these sorts of things because they can say, oh, there's an indigent patient fund.
For $2.
And I'm thinking, how would you feel after working for 6, 7, 8 hours on somebody and you got paid $4?
You know, it happens. It happens now under private insurance, if you really want to be honest about it. It's not just the government doing that. It's health insurance companies altogether. It's worse now. We're getting denials based on medical necessity that the insurance company decides is necessity. So it has nothing to do with your boards. It has nothing to do with your specialty societies, your doctor acumen. It only depends on what the insurance company and the government says is medically necessary or experimental. It's amazing.
It is amazing. And this certainly is one of the things that was so wrong and so many people pointed out in the first place when the health care law was put out there, that it seemed to be an effort to show that it wasn't going to be socialized medicine.
Yeah.
So they hung their hat on the insurance companies. But the insurance companies are basically now controlled by the government, so they will do whatever they're told to do.
So in your opinion, and I made a statement at least privately, I don't think I've done it publicly yet, but the fact that the government is now cutting a check to the insurance companies based on their say-so, my heart of hearts said that is single payer. They did it backdoor, and this is what we have now. And whoever holds the purse strings holds the healthcare system hostage. Do you see it the same way, or was I jumping a step?
I think you're absolutely right. And this is this is the sort of thing, and if any particular company wants to stay in good with the government and make sure that they're on a list mm-hmm. and that they can be part of the exchange, because all companies aren't, they're going to make sure they dance to the tune. And I'm sure we will see this happening, what you describe, this medical necessity mm-hmm. as really a rate-limiting step to care.
This is so insidious. It's based on, it's quicksand, and they're selling this by by coercion. They're using the race card 24/7 all of a sudden. I mean, it wasn't as bad before, but now it's just out of control. We had to talk before we got on about Christmas and not being able to wear a Santa hat, but this is serious. We're talking about using the race card to shut people up while you basically ingrain two-tier medicine, two-tier society, where if you're a friend or you're a crony, doesn't matter what color you are now, just as long as you have green, you're special, and everybody else is a serf. That's really, and you're supposed to like it. And if you have an opinion, then all of a sudden you're a racist, you're a sexist, you want people. It's amazing.
It is amazing. And I find it shocking that I can't decide if people have bought into it or if, frankly, people are so sick and tired of hearing about it that it's like hearing a barking dog or something. You just try to turn your ears off so you just don't have to listen anymore.
I hope it's not – I don't know what I hope. I just hope people stop letting it pass, because as long as you allow the dog to bark, it's going to continue to do so. And it has the chilling effect of status quo moving forward. And it's okay to say that, whether it's true or not. And when racism really does rear its head, which you know it's out there, but this is not Russia. This is not China. I mean, people make it sound like we're moving backwards and that we're back in Jim Crow, and it's the farthest thing from the truth. When you think about the fact that we have, you know, a person that was elected twice, not by black people, but by white people, how racist can the country actually be?
And the people. Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm very, I don't even know quite the word to describe, maybe even more shallow than that about it.
Mm-hmm.
Look at television.
Oh, yeah.
And some of the couples that you see on television, just randomly, black and white couples.
Mm-hmm.
Black men pawing over white women on Dancing with the Stars. And years ago, I remember growing up, they didn't want Frank Sinatra to kiss Diane Carroll after she sang on his show. And I'm thinking, we have come a very long way. And to completely disregard that, all to protect a president, is damaging to the nation. It's so false, and how someone could set race relations back merely to protect a president and his flawed policies, I really think is unconscionable.
I think you're absolutely right. And to couch it in such a way that if you are questioning it, the hypocrisy is just, it's astounding, because the people who are proponents of this aren't not in the system, don't plan to be in the system, will never partake of this system because it's not good enough for them. That's the sick part about this.
Yes, yes. Oh, I've felt that way so often about so many things. Times you'll look at the internet newspaper or something, and there'll be yet another incredibly wealthy person, mm-hmm. we're talking in the billions, saying how wonderful socialism is, and I'm thinking, well, that's easy for you to say. You aren't one of the middle-class schmucks that's just trying to get along in life and put some money away and save it, that you have enough money, even if it became socialistic, that you'd still have your big house and you'd still have everything you have in your private planes and be able to get your own doctor. So I just always feel like, so shut up about it and leave it to the middle class to decide.
Exactly. The people who actually work and produce. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that dizziness may be a sign of heart disease, iron deficiency, high or low blood pressure, low blood sugar, or an inner ear infection? Dizziness can take the form of a spinning sensation, also known as vertigo, or a feeling of lightheadedness. The individual can also feel faint or have a rapid heartbeat. If you take high blood pressure medication, remember to take the medication daily as directed to control your blood pressure. Diabetics must remember to eat after taking their medication and to eat at regular intervals. If you have anemia, make sure to take a multivitamin that contains iron and to eat vegetables such as spinach. Dizziness after a cold or flu may be due to a virus. If you have dizziness, it is important to see your doctor for a complete physical examination. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. George, and we're joined today by my special guest, Dr. Marilyn Singleton. She is a board-certified anesthesiologist, a professor, and a member of the board of directors of American Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. And before the break, we were having a conversation about the hypocrisy of this Obamacare rollout. And I think that, you know, socialism is one problem here. There's many things going on with this, with society all of a sudden. Collectivism, socialism, fascism, and they're masterful at using the media to make you think one thing's happening when it's the opposite. I read an article yesterday which I had no idea about Medicaid. I don't know if you've heard this, but they're used Oregon as the example, but I'm sure it's nationwide. I had no idea that Medicaid was actually a loan, basically. So if you qualify for Medicaid and you access the system, if you have property or anything of value, your estate can be gone after or attached after you're dead to get the money back. Did you know that?
Yeah, that isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I was shocked and appalled.
But you figure, okay, you've gotten the money from the government, mm-hmm. and if they've decided there's money lying around, I think it isn't it anything above $2,000 while you're alive, and then after you're dead, since you don't need it. There are so many rules that people don't understand, and I have a friend who is originally from El Salvador, and she's sort of someone I look to when you describe the American dream and the kind of immigrant that you're so happy to have come to this country. She didn't speak a word of English. They don't teach English in school down there. And she'd always had a job, and her husband had moved here, and so she moved here with her 8-year-old son, and neither of them spoke English. She wouldn't let him go in a bilingual class. She just said he needs to go in an English class. That's the only way he's going to really learn English. He has no accent now. He's 13 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, he speaks English perfectly. Mm-hmm. You'd think he was born here. And she started going to school at the English Center, which is a place for adults to learn English. And in 2 years, she spoke English. She went into a dental assistant program. She's now a dental assistant. And it is amusing to me when people talking about how, oh, they want unemployment for longer and all that. Well, yeah. Jackie wanted a job. In a month after finishing her program, she found a job. And the job is now permanent for her. She's off probation, et cetera. And so they offered her health insurance. Mm-hmm. And she just said, oh, this is so wonderful. Medi-Cal, which is what we call it in California for Medicaid, she says, It's terrible. And I never wanted to be on it. And her whole view is that you take care of yourself, and when you're struggling, you use the government as a helping hand, but your whole goal is to take care of yourself. And I look at what the government's doing mm-hmm. by always wanting to extend this benefit or that benefit and making it, well, it's okay, we don't call food stamps anymore, so it doesn't have that sense that you're using welfare, mm-hmm. and making people think, well, it's okay to live off the government.
Well, it's that marketing. It's the packaging. It's making it cool and trendy to want the government to take care of you. And if you're an individual, if you want to do things on your own, then somehow you're either a terrorist, you're an anarchist, something's bad about it all of a sudden. You shouldn't want to try to be the best that you can be. It's all about being mediocre and being part of the herd. That's
a problem. Oh, absolutely. Well, the idea of what's happening in schools now where there aren't winners anymore.
Yeah.
That everyone gets a prize. And that just goes against not even human nature, animal nature. Anybody who has a pet knows that the pet loves rewards, mm-hmm. that pets vie for attention by behaving well, etc., and people do the same thing. And to try to really beat down our human nature, where it seems like we're born wanting to better ourselves, but suddenly have somebody say, oh, no, that's okay, that you don't need to better yourself, that if you don't work hard, we'll just take up the slack. Don't worry about it.
Well, it's a two-edged sword here. Not only are they giving you the carrot, but they're giving you the stick, too. So if you do want to achieve, then you took it from somebody else. You're a bad person. You're a racist. You want someone to die. You basically want somebody to have some, or think ill of somebody just because you want to succeed. It's a zero-sum game. If you do something, you've, by definition, removed it from somebody else. And the people,
which, of course, we know is not true.
Absolutely not. And the people who are on the other end who think it's okay just to sit back and get something now are emboldened. They're empowered to say that you took it from me and you don't deserve it either. I mean, this whole thing about transfer of wealth, what they weren't joking. When they said spread the wealth around or transfer the wealth, they were not joking. And this Medicaid debacle, you know, now that I understand exactly what it is, it's horrible. So what, under Obamacare, they've expanded the role of or your ability to qualify for Medicaid to 400% of poverty. That means people making $23,000, you know, middle-class people will actually be pushed into the Medicaid system. If they own a home, if they own property, their children won't get that. They've actually taken wealth, literally, from people who have it. And it'll be transferred to the government. It won't go to the rich. It'll go to the government. That's really the thing that we didn't get.
And this is one of these things. Now, I'm glad that made the news in the last day or two. Mm-hmm. However, if you didn't read this Medicaid fine print in the news, mm-hmm. you're going to get a big surprise. And if people don't know it and the word isn't put out there that this is not a good deal and don't get on Medicaid, because basically the government then owns you.
Absolutely.
And you can't get something for nothing.
That is the crux of your article. I mean, please, how do people fall into the trap of you can cover 30 million people, more people, give them more services, and have them pay less? What is up with that? How can anybody fall into that trap? It's not possible.
But people want to think that. And I think that's the thing. It's like believing you're going to win the lottery when it's one in a billion chance or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Yes, someone wins it, and why can't it be me? And I think part of it is if you drum an idea into people's heads long enough, it will become the truth. What did Stalin say? You know, you tell a lie often enough, it becomes the truth. And they've actually done research in this area, media research people, and they say that if you make a statement 25 times, it becomes the truth.
Well,
so,
wow.
And I'm pretty amazing. And when you think about it, it makes sense because most people don't have a lot of sources. Most people don't have the time to go take an issue that they hear about and sit for an hour on the computer and try to research it on the internet, and then after you do that, decide which source was a reliable source and which source had some bias to it, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up just hearing the one-liner on the news, and that becomes the truth.
So if you like your doctor, you can keep it. It's going to be cheaper. You're going to save $2,500 a year as a family. What else was, I mean, this list is endless of the nonsense. So I guess now, where do we stand in terms of Medicare? I mean, Medicare is, we're supposed to, we're all paying into the system if you have a job.
Yes.
You're paying
2.9%.
That's a lot of money.
All your earnings. And it is a lot of money. And over a lifetime, I think one of the things that amazes me about it is basically they're taking, assuming you make an average, what a couple of years ago would be considered an average wage mm-hmm. of $43,000 a year, that they're taking $100 a month away from your earnings. And that's being put into a pile to pay for Medicare, which you may or may not ever get, but that will be, you know, 45 years in the future, assuming you started working when you were 20,
mm-hmm.
and this money is collected over the whole time you're working. With Obamacare, they've raised that for people who make over $170,000, but they've added, I think it's 0.9% more that they take out of the paycheck for Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, if somebody actually pays attention to their little pay slip and see that, oh, Medicare tax, and then, you know, X amount of dollars taken out for that, well, that's all well and good. That goes to the hospital part of Medicare. But then, when you get Social Security, automatically the premium for Part A, that's the hospital Medicare, is taken out of your Social Security check. You have no say in that.
Mm.
Even though they say you don't have to take Part A Medicare, as soon as you tap into Social Security, you have to take it. And if you don't want it, too bad. And if you try to drop out of it after you've already taken Social Security payments, they take the Social Security money back, and you don't get any more Social Security payments.
Well, hold on. That means you paid for 40-some-odd years into a pot for you to have money when you retire. That's supposedly a lockbox in your money. So you're telling me that if you don't become a victim, they can take all of the money that you put in over the course of your working lifetime?
Well, you won't get the benefits.
Well,
you won't get your monthly Social Security check. And this has actually been litigated because so many people are shocked to hear this. They think, oh, how can that be? And it's because of a rule that, and this is an example of how rules make the law, not what Congress said the law was, because
mm-hmm.
that doesn't really say that in the Social Security law. But then a rule was written that they have to follow that says if a person does not take their Part A Medicare, their Social Security checks will cease.
That is unbelievable. And Medicare becomes your primary. So even if you have Blue Cross or Aetna or whatever, and you say, hey, I have PPO, great insurance, that's still not your primary. You're still a Medicare patient, and you have to access Medicare. You can't go around it. Even if you say, please, I just want to use my Cigna, that's an option.
Right. And that's what the lawsuit came about, because the folks who sued had really good insurance, and they wanted to keep it, and
mm-hmm.
they still wanted to get their Social Security payments. And the judge was even, in her own way, somewhat critical of the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Said, "I don't know what the purpose of it is, but I'm a judge. I have to follow the law, and this is what the law says."
That's ridiculous. The law and a rule aren't the same thing, are they?
The rule has the force of law.
Oh.
I mean, this is why this whole thing of now Congress wanting to sue Obama, they have no other way to stop him from doing all these administrative changes to Obamacare, is Congress is supposed to write the laws. That's what the Constitution says. That's kind of how it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Congress writes the laws. The executive department, which is the president's department, and all his cabinet, that's part of the executive department, is supposed to make sure that the laws are enforced. But they have the ability to write regulations, which are supposed to expand on the laws. Now, classically, regulations would just be to make sure that something's defined properly. Now they're using the regulations that actually expand the law. And I think contraception is a perfect example. There's no place in the actual Obamacare law that says contraception is part of preventive medical care. But it's the regulation where it was left up to the secretary, meaning the Secretary of Health and Human Services, to decide what preventive care was over and beyond what the United States Preventive Task Force came up with, you know, certain immunizations and some basic preventive things. Mm-hmm. And then the secretary could make a decision on what she decided preventive care was, and the secretary decided contraception was preventive care. Therefore, that meant it had to be part of the free coverage and insurance. So this is an example of where the regulation basically rewrites the law, but it has the force of law.
And we have someone who knows nothing about health care, about costs, about running a business, about anything, making pronouncements that makes the whole thing even more expensive and ethically and morally, you know, challenging, to put it mildly. I say offensive, that the government is now in the business of deciding whether you can have a child, whether you can't, who lives and who dies. And they're making literally life and death decisions in utero and after. And it's making you go against the Hippocratic Oath if you're a doctor. You know, if you don't believe it, you can do harm, you're put on the line now of do it or you won't have a job. If it's hospital-based and peer-reviewed, you're really running uphill if you decide to be part of the system.
That's right. I mean, more and more it points to doctors just having to, enough doctors deciding no. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be in that system because it's destroying medicine as we know it.
Let's take a break and visit that a little bit deeper. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that an inability to lose weight can be due to an underactive thyroid gland? The thyroid gland is an important organ that controls the metabolism. Signs of an underactive thyroid gland include depression, hair loss, weight gain, a low blood pressure, feeling cold, constipation, and a lower libido. Risks for low thyroid function include iron deficiency, liver dysfunction, family history of thyroid disease, and an irregularity in the immune system. If you have noticed any of these symptoms, or you have noticed swelling in the front of your neck, or the collar of your shirt feels tight, you should see your doctor for further evaluation, including blood tests to evaluate the levels of thyroid hormone in your bloodstream. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow sniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow sniffles.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. George, and I'm having a really important conversation with Dr. Singleton about what we're told and what's actually going on in terms of government health insurance. Medicaid, we know, we found out, is basically a loan if you have any means at all. And now we're learning about Medicare and the fact that it's coercion. You know, this is not a choice. If you don't take Medicare, if you don't basically lower your ability to get quality medical care and follow the government mandates, they will sap your Social Security. They punish you if you don't play the game. They make it sound like you have a choice. So if everybody went to Medicare for all, we would all be, just the thought of this is kind of frightening. They would really control our access to health care on every level based on someone like Kathleen Sebelius.
The sad part is, and this I think is what people don't realize, and when they don't complain about one person basically making up all the rules for all of our health care lives, is even if you happen to like that person now, mm-hmm. it might not be that person next time. And this is why people should worry that it could be you. It could be working against you next time. You just shouldn't allow this to happen, because the choice should always be yours. And they've taken the choice away, and people who are saying, oh, well, isn't it great, and now I have a pre-existing condition, and I can get health insurance. Wow, isn't that wonderful?
Mm-hmm.
Well, sadly, it's a small handful of people who end up benefiting from the pre-existing condition program, and so now it's ruined for everybody else.
Well,
and people don't realize that.
Well, remember they had a small program for the pre-existing people as the Obamacare system was rolling out. It went bankrupt, and they wouldn't allow anybody else into it because the whole system was untenable.
Exactly. And they have not used insurance the way insurance is supposed to be used.
Mm-hmm.
The whole point of insurance is that you put money away, you don't use that money for trivial things, and that it's used for very big things. What if our home insurance were used the way they want you to use health insurance, and that you could use your home insurance to repair your toilet when it got stuck, or your garbage disposal when it stopped working, and all the other little dribs and drabs around your house? It's for when your house burns down, or a thief breaks in and steals everything in your house, something that really sets you back and that you have totally not planned for. When you think about it, most reasonable people realize at some point they're going to get a cold, they're going to get flu, they're going to have some aches and pains as they get older. But what you need insurance for is when you are diagnosed with your colon cancer or whatever, and you need a colectomy and then some chemotherapy, and all the money that you've put away, then that's going to come back to you. But you use it for big things when mm-hmm. you need to use it, and that's how an insurance market should work. And in the meantime, you just take care of yourself. And if people are poverty-stricken, they can seek help from the government, but to have every single person be thrown into a system where they're convinced that all your care must be free is outrageous. And the worst of it is, no one is any healthier because nobody has, as they call it, skin in the game. I see this with if people have to pay for a medication and it's a reasonable price, and I'm not talking about some of these outrageously priced mm-hmm. medicines, you know, talk about a whole nother topic,
mm-hmm.
That they will take those medicines. They bought them. They will take them. And you well know the compliance rate of patients following doctor's orders is only about 50%. And part of that 50%, many psychologists believe, is that the patient has, they have no stake in it,
mm-hmm.
that somebody else has paid for it. So they don't care as much about it, even though it's their own health. There's cigarette smoking treatments that's kind of the one thing medically, excuse me, that's done that follows the rule that psychiatrists use, where psychiatrists make patients pay because they feel that that's an important part of the therapy, is that you have to be invested in that therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with cigarette smoking treatments, that if people don't pay for it, they don't quit. And there has to be an investment in somebody's own health. And they're just sort of breeding that out of us. And in the end, the only people who will actually get what they want, what they need, will be people who can afford to pay out of their own pocket. There will be a whole group of, I call them the black market doctors, who just will be completely outside of the system. But again, we're right back where we started from, that this was supposed to help the middle class, and all it is pushing the middle class lower and lower and lower.
I think what we do get is the government skimming off of the backs of people with taxes, with regulations, with the fact that if you had property, you won't by the time that you're, you know, no longer on this earth, and the government gets, by default, gets the wealth. You know, if it's not the government, then it's going to be the corporations that are fed by the government. Now, I personally thought that the insurance companies would be annexed by the government in this. And it seems to me that it's just a slow collapse of private health insurance. If they're paying the premiums now, they're going to take over the whole system at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a system that's patient and doctor friendly. The doctors are now being, and we've had a conversation briefly about this, they're trying to change, or talking about changing the medical education. So instead of 4 years of medical school, you get 3 years of medical school. And I know it's already changed from the residency standpoint, with the time that you're allowed to be on call and the amount of patient contact and clinical exposure. It's dropped in the last 15 years, hasn't it?
Yes, yes. I mean, part of it was for safety. They didn't mm-hmm. want residents staying up all night, night after night after night. Interestingly, in surgery programs, and you know you're a surgeon, that as they used to say, the best things you learn are after midnight.
It's true.
But people are saying now surgery residents are graduating, and they've only done a handful of certain cases, that, you know, you should graduate, and you've done 50 hernias, mm-hmm. 75 gallbladders, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
and now they're ending up only doing a few of these things, and I'm thinking, oh, is that really who I want as my general surgeon, somebody who's only done 5 cases?
You make an excellent point. This is a training for a reason, because you actually have to physically do a certain number to be proficient. These kids coming out don't understand the medical theory. If you do 3 years, you're not going to – it's so condensed that it's impossible to learn it all. I mean, I just marvel at all the textbooks that we went through and actually had to know cover to cover.
I do, too, sometimes. I look back and think, did I read that? Did I learn that? And then sometimes things will pop out of my mouth, and I realize, okay, well, that just went back 30 years.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think these kids can do that now. And, you know, if you can't learn anatomy by not, you know, actually dissecting, you can't learn that virtually. You can't just look at a slide and not touch a patient. We had, I mean, it sounds really sick, but professional patients who would teach us, literally walk us through doing urology and GYN exams. God bless them. They tell you what not to say, where not to touch, you know, things like that. They don't have that now.
I couldn't believe it when they started virtual anatomy, where, you know, you actually didn't dissect a cadaver. But the thing, this all feeds into something that you touched on earlier in our conversation, the idea of collectivism, mm-hmm. is that you can see it coming, that once you dumb down doctors and try to make all, what do they call us now? Providers, mm-hmm. the same. I mean, that was the beginning of the end when they started calling people providers, that I'm not a provider. I'm a physician. The patient is a patient. It's a special person. He's not a client. And yet they started using these words, and that they're suddenly medicine isn't special anymore. Suddenly being a physician is no longer special. And when I say special, it doesn't mean that I think I'm hot stuff. It means that I know something, and I think that I can provide a service to the patient that's beyond what they're going to get on the Oprah Winfrey Show. And I am proud that I know that, and I can help people in that way. But once you make it, oh, well, they just went to school the same length of time as hairdressing school. They're nothing special. And then you have a physician assistant, mm-hmm. who, oh, well, physician assistants can do exactly the same thing. Nurse practitioners can do exactly the same thing. I don't see any difference. And, gee, guess what? They even went to school the same amount of time. So why are they any different?
Oh, this is definitely a movement towards that. And it's making us part of a team, a healthcare giving team, as if we're coming from the same point of view and reference and training, and it's not the same. But if you think about how they're rolling this out with meaningful use, evidence-based medicine, you know, there was an article for a minute on the web about multivitamins have no health benefits. And it turns out, and my favorite part is when you click on the actual article, an ad comes up for a pharmaceutical. Don't you love that?
Oh, and you know who's behind
exactly.
That.
That's exactly what my point is. It's this evidence-based medicine is driven by the pharmaceutical industry. They run these supposed research studies. They jerry-rig the results, and then they come up with the answer, which is it has to be a pharmaceutical. That's the only thing that works, and it kills more people than anything else. It's marketing. We're like driven by this faceless entity that's trying to make us, you know, think a certain way when we get up to when we go to sleep, and it's against our health, it's against our life, and it's kind of interesting how this is working, and it's working everywhere, politically, socially, economically. It's all about winning at all costs, as long as you're on the winning team, even if it
that's
works
right.
against you.
And the sad thing is, the winning team is the team with all the money.
Yeah.
And so, again, the regular people are just becoming victims of the corporatization of medicine. And that's what we have to fight, mm-hmm. and not be part of that. And it gets harder and harder, because this is where, again, those regulations come in, when they start telling you, this is how you have to practice, this is what you do, this is what we think is necessary. Mm-hmm. And, yes, there have to be some controls and there has to be some oversight. We don't want a bunch of quacks out there hurting people. But on the other hand, for the most part, that's not who most people in medicine are. Most people in medicine are always trying to do the best for their patients.
I agree, and especially if you talk about the age of the doctor. I think now there's becoming a demarcation between old school and what's coming out now. You know, if people aren't even taking the Hippocratic Oath anymore, then they don't have the same mentality as you and I do. My job is to do no harm and to be an advocate for my patient. Nothing comes between that. Government, nobody. And this is now a system where it's a carrot. Well, you know, these are your guidelines. We expect you to do this because it's voluntary. The next thing is you do it or you don't get paid. And the next thing is you do it or you don't do it, you go to jail. That's how it's going to work. It's going to make
right.
you do it.
And already they're starting to come up with more and more rules about these electronic medical mm-hmm. records. One I found very amusing is one of the problems that has come up with the records is people cutting and pasting the past medical history into a new visit, since you have to write it every time there's a visit in order to use the records the way they want you to use the records. And now they are wanting to call this healthcare fraud or somehow penalize the doctor if it's clear that they've cut and pasted the past history into the current history. Number one, so many of these records take so long to fill out that you wanted people to use electronic records. What did you think they were going to do? That's what cut and pasting is for. You know? It's sort of one of these things. You ask for it, now you get it. Now you're trying to find something wrong with the way they're using it.
Well, they do anything to try not to pay you.
But exactly.
It was never about health care. It was about accessing statistical information. You know, they want to know how many people are on, and what people are on, and what kind of medications they're on. They want to know what your social situation is at home, whether you wanted to hurt yourself or you have a gun. That's what they want to know. This is all metadata, and it's being taken in by HHS and God knows who else, FBI, you know, the alphabet organizations who are going to use this thing against you. When they start making, you know, you have ideas and you're not happy with the government. And when that becomes a mental illness, and it is now under under the DSM qualification, it's some sort of antisocial behavior. I forget what it's called, but everybody's going to have some sort of diagnosis that can be potentially be used against them. And I really have a problem with that.
Oh, one of the things I first thought when these records came out, particularly I practiced in Beverly Hills in the 80s, and that was certainly a time of fast living and a lot of people using cocaine, and it was a very popular drug, you know, mm-hmm. among a lot of people. And it was very important to know if somebody was using drugs before you put them to sleep for a surgery. Now, one might guess if it were an ENT surgery. And they were getting their nose repaired in one way or another, mm-hmm. you might think, I guess this is why the lining of your nose is ruined. And so, but there were people certainly having other kinds of surgeries. And for whatever reason, you just got a feeling that they might use drugs. And one of the things I made clear is that I need to know this. I'm not here to bust you, mm-hmm. but anesthetics do not mix well with drugs, and your life could be at risk if you don't tell me the truth. And they didn't see a pen in my hand. They didn't see anything else. They just knew I wanted to know.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave them that sense that this was really private information that I needed to know to take good care of them, not because I was going to be a tattletale. Now, can you imagine sitting at the computer typing? Do you really expect the person to reveal to you that they're doing drugs?
No.
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 Not in a million years.
And then when you have a bad outcome and you don't know why, then, you know, who's the patient gets hurt and for what purpose? You know, that's only one example. Pediatricians do this or are involved with this every day. New York now has a rule that mandates vaccinations for flu. What if the doctor, you know, the doctor just makes a recommendation and the parent says, I don't want to do it? Does that make DFACs get involved? I mean, where does this line end? You know, where does your choice, your individual right to choose something end and government mandate of what's best for you health-wise kick in? Knowing that it's really not even best for you, it's just what they say it is, because they're in bed with some entity or some interest. It's not right. It really isn't.
No, it isn't. And one thing I find, and like you call it, the marketing, that people accept this because it's drummed in their heads. Mm-hmm. When you talk about some of the drugs and some of the conditions that we're being told we need medication for. This whole idea that every depressed person now needs Cymbalta. Sometimes you get depressed, and unless something has started going on, and you can no longer get dressed in the morning and go to work, but just not feeling as peppy as you usually do is not an indication to get started on drugs.
Exactly. And it's younger and younger with little, you know, scientific proof. There's an article again that came out recently about how young children are being put on antipsychotics and antidepressants, and there's no medical indication, really, for it, and there's no long-term follow-up. No one knows about the safety, but the number of children, like 50% increase or even more in the past several years based on the child being unruly, basically means they're an individual a lot of times, and they have an opinion, and they want them to shut up.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing that's amazing to me is I think about, I didn't talk until I was about 3, and my mother said she knew I could talk because sometimes she'd hear me talking to my sister, but I didn't talk to anybody else. And, and of course, now no one can shut me up, but, you know, I ended up starting kindergarten when I was 3 and a half, and because I suddenly decided I was going to talk to everybody. And I think of these poor children now that they would be called autistic.
Oh, yeah.
And suddenly be labeled. And it's just shocking to me, behaviors that when I was young kind of worked their way out. I went to school with the same kids from kindergarten to eighth grade. I was in Catholic school. And I remember one kid, Kenny, he was just a little wild child, and over the years he just settled out, and, you know, nobody was on medicines then, that the nuns just ruled with an iron hand, and they also gave recess 3 times a day.
Oh, yeah.
And recess helped these boys. I read an article about education. It was really quite interesting, and it began with boys are treated like imperfect girls in school. And I thought that was fantastic. And the fellow was talking about boys are different than girls. They're more rambunctious. And to punish them in school for being rambunctious and not acting like the little girl who's sitting next to them is just plain wrong. And that things need to be done in education to channel that energy rather than squash it.
On that note, we have to break, and I really have to have you back because our conversation there just got rolling. What's the best way, quickly, that people can reach you?
That go to our website, aapsonline.org, and there's a lot of information about Obamacare, Medicare, Medicaid, and finding physicians who are opted out of these programs.
Thank you. It's a blessing to have you on. I'm looking forward to having you back.
Oh, thank you so much. Looking forward to coming back.
You're listening to Medicine on Call.